And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. My guests are talking about very interesting topics, no two of which are related. My next guest is an actor best known for his role as B.J. Hunnicutt in the TV series MASH. We're going to discuss human rights and the use of torture to extract information that led to the assassination of Osama bin Laden. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question of Mike Farrell, you can do that. Most of us know Mike Farrell from the TV series MASH. He was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. He graduated from Hollywood High here, did a hitch in the Marine Corps, served our country, and then worked a variety of different jobs until he landed a role on the TV soap opera Days of Our Lives. Mikey is best known for playing Captain B.J. Hunnicutt in the popular series MASH. He had 8 years on the show, and it gave him the opportunity to not only act, but also to write and direct several episodes. Outside of MASH, his first experience was the CBS film Memorial Day. He did many documentary films and so forth. His production company was the production company that produced the movie Patch Adams, starring Robin Williams. In 1998, NBC had him as a veterinarian on their show Providence. Beyond the film industry, Mike is very active and an outspoken citizen, promoting human rights, opposing the death penalty, and those are two of his primary concerns. In his spare time, Mike loves to read, spend time with his wife and children, and he enjoys cross-country motorcycling. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you today?
I'm okay. Billy, how are you?
I am terrific. Thank you so much for being my special guest today.
You're very welcome, and thank you for being so patient with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to have you on board. Really want to get into a nice discourse with you about current events and get your perspective on this. And as you know, several weeks ago, the entire national discussion really revolved around the assassination of Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. And bin Laden was public enemy number one in the United States since September the 11th, 2001, the terror attacks then. And SEAL Team 6, to their very credit, they put put themselves in harm's way. They got in, eventually had to assassinate the man. It was very efficient. There was no loss of life and so forth. But looking back on the incident really is remarkable, because we got some of the information that we got to give us the location of Osama bin Laden from our activities in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, where we had the detainees. And there, it's been written up in Newsweek and all of the periodicals, the major periodicals, about the use of torture and specifically waterboarding to extract the information from those prisoners that eventually led to the assassination of Osama bin Laden. Now, the end result, the American people are very happy with. We wanted Osama bin Laden. We wanted our sense of justice. He never was brought to trial, but he was assassinated, and that, for many people, was a sense of justice. So I'm going to ask you the Machiavellian question, Mike. Did the ends justify the means? Was the use of waterboarding and torture justified to extract the information that eventually led to Osama bin Laden's death?
No, not in the least. First of all, I quarrel with some of the statements you've made.
And oh, okay.
I don't argue that you have created them, but that some of these statements have been made by people that have been, contradicted by people in very high positions. There's no evidence that information received, gotten from torture at Guantanamo or anywhere else, led to the discovery of where Osama bin Laden was. There's no evidence that torture has resulted in any actionable evidence given to our intelligence people, and that's been made very clear by high intelligence sources, and in fact people associated at one point with the Bush administration. So that claim has been made to justify the use of torture, and I think the use of torture is both an egregious insult to the people of the world and to the United States, when we have been traditionally a nation that stands for justice, has actually prosecuted people for the use of torture, waterboarding in particular. I think this is a hideous step in the wrong direction for us to both do this and to claim that we've had some success. Secondly, I would say that what's important to know is that the intelligence work and the specific work of SEAL Team 6, with which no one can argue, was exactly the sort of thing that we should be pursuing in regard to this whole business of the so-called war on terrorism, instead of an unnecessary war in Iraq, and in my view, an unnecessary and inappropriate war in Afghanistan. These are the kinds of behaviors, this kind of selective use of military force when and if necessary, the appropriate use of police force and the proper use of intelligence are the kinds of things that will result in the capture and eradication, if necessary, of terrorists. And third, I would point out that, in my view, President Obama made a mistake in stating that he would like to see Osama bin Laden killed or captured. I think that that message went out, and I think it was received, and I think as a result of that, Osama bin Laden did not survive to stand trial. And had he done so, we would have established ourselves as the nation of laws we claim to be, rather than a nation that goes in and kills people who are, as you put it, public enemies number one.
Interesting. Now, I like that. A lot of good stuff in your answer there, Mike, that I want to come back on and chat about. Starting with the mistake that you believe that President Obama made by saying that he wanted to see Obama killed or captured. I remember when the news came out that Osama bin Laden had been assassinated, there was a real sense of joy, I mean, almost euphoria in the United States. I guess for some people it sort of marked the end of the tragedies of 9/11, and that gave people closure on that. But what I remarked at the time was that here we were celebrating the death of somebody, not necessarily the death of his ideal. So I want you to talk to me, if you will, please, about the way in which that was handled in the media, the public discourse, and what the American people seemed to have taken away from the death of Osama bin Laden.
Well, first of all, it was presented in the media and was presented by the government as a major success. And, of course, because we've lived under the shadow of 9/11 for so many years, and because people have been terrorized by this image of Osama bin Laden and the kind of specter of al-Qaeda being there, being everywhere, being perhaps under our beds, one hopes for a resolution. But if you will, for just a moment, ask yourself and ask the public what they would have felt if SEAL Team 6 had gone in and arrested this man, put him in a helicopter, taken him to a nearby base, transported him to you tell us where, and put him on trial. Would we not have exulted in exactly the same way? Would we not have felt the same thrill, felt the same sense of perhaps even a better sense of closure, because in fact we would have felt justified in what we had done, and we would have felt as though we had behaved in a manner that's consistent with our stated ideals?
Well, that's an interesting question. My guess is Mike Farrell. And Mike, I'm going to take the other side of that argument just to hear your thoughts on this, because the American people were weary after 10 years of war, for sure. But we've also got some past experience with public trials that is not particularly good. And I look at the Watergate trials and how long those took. I look at basically all of the big show trials that we have here in the United States. It wasn't the immediate sense of justice that the assassination, for right or for wrong, it just gave us closure right then and there. If there had been a trial, yes, we would have done it correctly, and it would have been done procedurally correctly, but I imagine that it would have been a protracted event as well, which may not have been as satisfying as just closing the door on the incident and moving on. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would certainly disagree with that. I think if you look back at the so-called shoe bomber, the so-called the fellow in the Times Square, the
right.
People who tried to detonate the bomb years before the 9/11 attack at the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, there were trials that took place, and they were very successful. They resulted in these people spending the rest of their lives in jail, and there was the same sense of closure available to people when they knew that these people were safely put behind bars and could never do the same kinds of hideous actions that had put them there again. So, the drama, the kind of six guns blazing stuff that comes out of our history really is, I think, an answer that really doesn't serve us in the long run.
No, the Wild West mentality was probably best left in the Wild West. That's true. One more follow-on question, Mike, on this particular subject. And a lot of people, right or wrong, say that we were in a war against terror, and war is war. Ironically, you played an actor in the middle of the Korean War. And to those people who say war is war, there are certain rules and conventions that do get thrown outside, get thrown out during a war. What would you say to that, and particularly in how it relates to the waterboarding, the Gitmo, the treatment of prisoners at Gitmo?
Well, I oppose torture under any circumstances, as I think in throughout our history America has done. I think it's been demonstrated by experts that torture proves nothing in terms of providing satisfactory answers, because a person in torture will tell you anything, including what he wants you to hear or what he thinks you want to hear.
Hmm.
But the war on terror, in my view, is a huge mistake. I think that, as I said earlier, the combination of police and intelligence combined across the world would have been the appropriate response to the attacks on September 11th. I think that rather than elevate these people to the status of a warring faction, what we should have done is called them the criminals they were and condemned the act as a criminal act and treated them as international criminals. And as such, we would have been, I think, far better served by the actions of the military and intelligence and police forces around the world that are really the only ones that have done any serious damage to the various networks of terrorists that continued to exist after that time.
Hmm. My guest is Mike Farrell, actor and political activist. And Mike, I'm going to change and focus our attention away from the war on terror, which has been draining for the American people over the last 10 years, and turn our attention to an even longer standing war that's going on right now in Africa. And it's not one that people know very much about. Fortunately, you do. This war is the civil war in Uganda that has lasted for more than 30 years, beginning way back in the 1980s. It's the Lord's Resistance Army, headed by Joseph Kony, and they use widespread human rights violations, including murder, abduction, mutilation, sexual enslavement of women and children, forcing children, even some children as young as 5 years old, to carry arms and participate in the hostilities. Now, the United States as a country, our foreign policy, you know, we look at human rights violations in China, and we poke China in the eye with a stick and say, you really need to bone up on your human rights activities in China, which is perhaps a foolhardy thing. But we turn our back on Africa, don't seem to be doing anything there. So as a participant in Amnesty International, what can you tell me about what Amnesty International is doing, the war in Uganda, the civil war in Uganda, and some of the effects that they're having there?
Well, first of all, my association, although I support Amnesty, my association is primarily with Human Rights Watch, which is the world's largest American-based human rights organization. And what we do, what all private human rights organizations can do, is point up the atrocities that are taking place around the world. But the United States has actually not been silent with regard to the Lord's Resistance Army and what's going on in Uganda, and it has been actually quite active in some of the other areas in Africa that have seen the sorts of atrocities we're talking about, the rapes in the Congo, for example, and the terrible things in the coastal Africa that were resolved actually with the help of the United States and the United Nations.
Hmm.
So, what you know, the Lord's Resistance Army is a particularly ugly situation. As you indicated, the leader is a hideous individual who uses children in the worst way possible by kidnapping them from their parents and using them as ammunition carriers or sometimes the cannon fodder as the front lines in a battle, and uses the women as girls as sexual objects. And it's the history of that struggle is a long and arduous and I think horrific one. But when you deal with countries that are not as advanced, I'm trying to be careful here, not as advanced as some of our as ours or some of our allies, you have to be sadly, you have to be somewhat patient when you try to move them through example or through assistance to a place where there's a better understanding of the appropriate behavior of individuals and governments.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, I think what we can do is provide positive support. What we should not be doing, as is the case, unfortunately, in Uganda, is some of our extremists in this country going there and supporting the worst aspects of the Ugandan body politic or society or rules and regiments, saying, for example, that homosexuals should be put to death. This was done by Americans, by American religious people with a certain set of beliefs, to go there and say that the Ugandans should pass a law that says that any homosexual should be put to death. All this does is throw the entire society into a state of confusion and consternation, when what we could be doing is trying to solve the problems that things like the Lord's Resistance Army present to the people of Uganda and the people of the world.
Well, I agree. And that's where I applaud groups like yours, Human Rights Watch, as well as Invisible Children. And I know I was very flattered to learn that you heard my interview with Ben Kesey of Invisible Children.
Yes.
What do you think about the power of 20-somethings like that using social media to connect with other 20-somethings around the world to show support for the children swept up in the fighting in Uganda?
Well, I think it's extraordinary, and I think it's very hopeful. I have frankly, some ambivalence about social media and the way in which it's used. But I think that what we see what happened in Tunisia, and when you see what happened in Egypt, and what is attempting to be happening in Libya and in other parts of the world, Syria comes to mind, then you see that social media has an extraordinarily powerful, positive impact. In this instance that you're talking about in Uganda, the same. I have some concerns in the other areas of the way social media is used. And I think we have to find a kind of a happy medium so that the things that are done as a result of this instant access across international borders can be more positive than negative.
Well, I would agree with you about the positive aspects of Invisible Children. I'll have to have you back to talk about some of the negative effects of social media. Now you've piqued my interest on that, but unfortunately we're out of time. My guest has been Mike Farrell, television actor best known for B.J. Honeycutt, but also an author, has a book, Just Call Me Mike, and he's all over the Internet. Just look him up on Google. You will find all sorts of stuff. Mike, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, Billy. Thanks very much.
Thank you.